Tonight, as President Trump prepares for an historic summit with North Korea's Kim Jong-un, insights on what he'll face from those who have encountered the North Koreans before. A controversial verdict in a wrongful death lawsuit. The family of a man shot by police awarded just $4. A deadly hit and run as a woman drives her car onto a Little League field, killing a man who helped move kids to safety. A dilemma for hundreds of thousands of older Americans, how to pay the skyrocketing costs of insurance for long-term care. As summer approaches, a shortage not of jobs for teenagers, but of kids who want them. And it will take you to the middle of nowhere. Where do you think it is?
This is NBC Nightly News with Jose Diaz-Balart.
Good evening. Just 10 days from now, the President of the United States could very well be meeting with the dictator of North Korea, an unprecedented meeting with war and peace in the balance. And tonight, the full capacity of his administration is prepping for that historic moment. It comes at a time when the administration has started a trade war with our closest allies and neighbors and is confronting China on trade and its military expansion in the South China Sea. Our White House correspondent Kelly O'Donnell has a front row seat to the preparations.
North Korea's grand gesture, a letter from Kim Jong-un inside that oversized envelope, comes just as President Trump is downsizing expectations.
We're not going to go in and sign something on June 12th. We never were. We're going to start a process.
Spending the weekend at Camp David, today the president's focus, reflected on Twitter, hit a wide range of issues other than the coming nuclear summit. But Donald Trump Jr., who also went to Camp David, said in a radio interview today that his father is ready for North Korea.
He has a lot of leverage. He knows that, and he's not afraid to use that.
Part of that leverage, sanctions that can continue to cripple the North's economy.
I said I'm not going to put them on until such time as the talks break down.
The president considers this new dialogue an achievement in itself, while advice offered by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell urges the president to be cautious.
If you fall in love with a deal and it's too important for you to get it, and the details become less significant, you could get snookered.
After meeting Friday with North Korea's second most powerful official, the president said he expects multiple meetings will be needed to stop North Korea's nuclear threat. Today in Singapore, where the summit will be held in 10 days, Defense Secretary James Mattis gave a stark reminder of the U.S. goal.
The complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization and removal of all WMD on the Korean Peninsula.
A U.S. delegation has been at work all week at the demilitarized zone at the North Korean border doing preliminary negotiations on subjects for the Trump-Kim summit. And then separately, an advance team has been in Singapore hammering out logistics, including this very unusual request from North Korea to cover the high-priced hotel bills for Kim and his delegation. Tonight, an official familiar with that planning says they've resolved a way to pay for that big bill, and it won't be by the United States. Jose?
Kelly O'Donnell at the White House, thank you. Now that the summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un is on again, you may be wondering, how do you prepare for a high-stakes meeting with a North Korean dictator? We asked NBC's David Gura to get some insights from those who have dealt with the North Koreans before.
Madeleine Albright remembers months of prep for meetings with the current leader's father. President Clinton sent his Secretary of State to Pyongyang to help him decide whether to travel there himself.
You really do a lot of work. The intelligence community is always very important in terms of giving you a picture of what the person was like.
But North Korea is the most isolated country in the world, and intelligence reports only tell you so much. Secretary Albright says some things you just can't prepare for.
I'm standing next to him, and we're the same height. And I had on high heels, and then I looked over, and so did he.
Something else surprised Secretary Albright when she sat down with Kim Jong-il.
One could have really very substantive discussions with him.
How are you, my friend?
Ambassador Bill Richardson has traveled to North Korea 8 times.
They're very disciplined. They know exactly where they want to be. They think they're always right.
And in formal settings, he says, negotiators can be harsh and stubborn.
Don't expect an agreement right away. It's going to take time. The North Koreans are very patient, and they're tough. Be prepared.
For a long preamble, among other things.
K. Kim Jong-un is going to give you a lecture.
Ambassador Christopher Hill represented the U.S. in talks with North Korea.
These are people who really think differently, act differently, and frankly live in another universe at times.
He tried hard not to leave anything to chance.
I want to know precisely what they'd be raising, how they would be raising it, and therefore what the expectation would be of me.
President Trump has now met with the second most powerful man in North Korea, and he continues to rely on the advice of his Secretary of State. Mike Pompeo has taken two trips to Pyongyang, and both times he's met with the country's leader. Pompeo also negotiated the release of three American hostages last month.
Now, Jose, it's important to note the preparations are happening with some key vacancies. The White House just nominated an ambassador to South Korea. There are no guarantees he's going to be confirmed. There's no Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs. And the State Department's point person on North Korea recently retired.
David Gura, thank you very much. A developing story tonight in Arizona. Four shooting deaths in recent days, and police say at least three of them are connected. The most recent was this morning when a man was shot in an office. Yesterday, two women were shot and killed at a law office where they worked. Police say those shootings are related to the killing of a forensic psychiatrist on Thursday. Police described the shooter as an adult male, bald and wearing a dark colored hat. Across the country, a mid-Atlantic state area could be in for some rough weather tonight. More than 20 million people under flood watches. The ground in the region still saturated from heavy rains during the past week. We get the latest from NBC meteorologist Dylan Dreyer. Dylan.
Good evening, Jose. We're keeping a close eye on an area of low pressure that's going to move through the mid-Atlantic starting tonight, lasting through Sunday. With this storm, we'll see pockets of heavy rain. And since the ground is already so saturated in the Delaware, Washington, D.C., Maryland area, any additional heavy rain, 2 to 3 inches of rain, could cause more flooding. So that's why we're going to focus on that area as we continue through the weekend. It also comes with much colder temperatures. In fact, we'll be running about 10 to 15 degrees below average with highs on Sunday in D.C. 67. Boston only 60. It gets even colder as we go into Monday as highs struggle to get out of the 50s. 61 for a high in New York. Richmond about 79. And then we start to warm up on Tuesday. Jose?
Dylan Dreyer, thank you very much. Now to a story still unfolding in Maine. What prompted a woman to drive her car onto a baseball field during a Little League game last night? The kids were okay, but the car struck a 68-year-old man who died. We get the latest from NBC's Morgan Radford.
Terror during a Friday night Little League game.
Our ambulance to en route.
Cell phone video shows a swerving car speeding onto a ball field in the southern Maine town of Sanford.
I saw her almost hit two people.
Swinging erratically around the bases before hitting and killing a man.
A male that has been hit by a vehicle.
The driver then left the scene. 51-year-old Carol Sherrow was arrested at home and is now charged with manslaughter. A neighbor spoke with Sherrow before the arrest and said she was acting strangely.
She was saying some random things that didn't make sense, but she was a nice, quiet neighbor up to this point.
Family members told NBC News that the victim, 68-year-old Vietnam vet Douglas Parkhurst, was with his grandchild and was hit trying to close a nearby gate. Witnesses say it was an effort to stop the driver from escaping.
She came barreling, hit him up against the fence.
The old guy pushed the kids right out of the way. Took the hit for the kids.
Parkhurst died at the hospital. Now, Sanford police say he was responsible for a 1968 hit and run that killed a 4-year-old girl in upstate New York. The crime went unsolved for 44 years until his 2013 confession, but the statute of limitations expired, so no charges were filed. Meanwhile, back in Maine, police are collecting evidence.
We're working to compile all that so we can get a better picture of how things unfolded.
A search for motive as their community tries to heal. Morgan Radford, NBC News.
Authorities in Nicaragua say an American citizen has been killed in violence that has been rocking that country. Bar owner Sixto Henry Vera was found near two burned-out vehicles with a bullet wound to the head. More than 100 people have been killed by government forces loyal to embattled President Daniel Ortega. Now to a story that's been getting a lot of attention this week. The jury award of just $4 to the family of a man in Florida who was shot and killed by a police officer. The family filed a wrongful death lawsuit, and the jury decided that the man was largely responsible for his own death. We get more from NBC's Maya Rodriguez.
4 years later, the family of Gregory Hill is still reeling from the police-involved shooting that ended his life.
It's Father's Day. They got to go out to the graveyard. They're all
see their father because their father was murdered.
In January 2014, two Florida sheriff's deputies responded to Hill's home after a noise complaint. The officers claim Hill threatened them with a gun as he closed his garage door. Sheriff's Deputy Christopher Newman opened fire, striking Hill three times.
They're taught as if their life is in danger, they could use deadly force to counter that danger.
Tests showed Hill's blood alcohol content was five times the legal driving limit, and an unloaded gun was found in his back pocket. Hill's family filed a wrongful death suit against the sheriff's office. The jury found Hill 99% responsible for his own death and awarded his family $4, $1 for funeral expenses, and $1 for each of his three children.
Once I heard the amount, slap in the face.
In a statement, the sheriff's office said Deputy Newman made the best decision he could for the safety of his partner, himself, and the public, given the circumstances he faced. Hill's mother says for his family, the pain still feels fresh.
I hurt, but at least I don't live part of my life. These kids haven't even begun to live their life.
Maya Rodriguez, NBC News, Fort Pierce, Florida.
With unemployment now at an 18-year low, some jobs are going unfilled, and that includes jobs typically taken by teenagers during the summer. This year, many businesses relying on teens to fill seasonal jobs are finding themselves out in the cold. NBC's Carrie Sanders explains.
It is a teenage rite of passage, the summertime job.
Why don't you get a job, Spicoli?
What for?
You need money.
But the times, they're a-changing.
Show of hands, how many people have a summer job?
In the late 1970s, almost 60% of 16 to 19-year-olds had a summer job. Now, only a third work.
Why no summer job?
I'm away for like the whole month of July, and then I'm also volunteering at the hospital in June. So between my vacation and that, I don't really have time to have a job.
Volunteer hours, like working a food bank,
over.
A key metric on many of today's college applications, combined with summer studies and sports practices that don't let up when school's out, leaving today's teenagers with few and inflexible hours to work. Employers gearing up for the summer, feeling the impact.
Order number 101.
In Ogunquit, Maine, famed lobster restaurant Barnacle Billy's desperate to hire.
When I was a kid, you know, getting here as a teenager at a job would be like gold.
Yeah.
You know, today the teens aren't here?
No, they aren't here anymore. Yeah, we used to have two full shifts and people knocking down the door to work for us. They don't do that anymore.
Here, as in much of the nation, college students, mostly from Europe on temporary visas, fill as many as 50,000 summer jobs American teenagers once worked.
Much appreciated.
It's just a shifting demographic of the, you know, workforce, really.
A twist in Dallas.
What is C?
15-year-old Avery offered picking up tutoring jobs that fit her schedule, thanks to an app called Scratch.
They want this, and they love being empowered by the chance to work.
But for some overscheduled teens, the summer break is just that, a break.
The summer is like a time to just chillax and not have to deal with anything.
Ah, but as any adult will tell you, those teenage summer jobs can often become great memories. Kerry Sanders, NBC News, Ogunquit, Maine.
Still ahead tonight, the dilemma so many families face in trying to afford the high cost of long-term care. Also, the remarkable landing right on a busy street during rush hour. We're back with a question millions of Americans have asked themselves. Is it worth buying long-term care insurance? Policies are meant to pay for nursing care in case of a debilitating illness, but skyrocketing premiums are forcing many to drop their coverage. Here's NBC's Tom Costello.
Like many couples, Kathleen and Brian Donmoyer thought they were buying peace of mind with their long-term care insurance. The Genworth policy would cover intense nursing care should either of them need it.
My greatest fear is that my children have to take care of me.
But after 11 years, their insurance premiums suddenly skyrocketed, jumping from $1,900 a year to $2,300 to nearly $3,500 a year. Their options? Struggle to pay even higher premiums, stop paying and freeze the $60,000 they'd already paid in, or reduce their coverage. For families that earn too much to qualify for Medicaid, a nursing home can cost $100,000 a year at today's rates.
That's why you buy it, because it would basically bankrupt most people, or at least cause them to spend all their assets.
Hundreds of thousands of Americans are also facing higher premiums. Insurance companies say they haven't been charging enough for the coverage. The problem? Most long-term care insurers didn't anticipate their low interest rate returns on investment, but more importantly, how long people would live and how much nursing care would cost. The Dunn-Moyers long-term care insurer, Genworth, the nation's largest, says it's lost $2.8 billion and has no choice but to raise rates.
It's terrible that we have to raise the premiums, but we've lost billions, and we're not going to ever recover that.
In Pennsylvania, the Dunn-Moyers decided to lower their premiums by reducing their coverage.
We've tried to do everything we possibly could to not be a burden on someone else.
Forced to choose between paying for insurance they hope is never needed or risk going without. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
We are back in a moment with the flame seen streaking across the night sky. An incredible moment last night. The sky in southwest China lit up by the flash of a burning object. Turns out it was an extremely bright meteor. That's what we're being told. The fireball created by the friction as it entered the atmosphere. The kind of thing you could watch over and over again. So was this next scene, a remarkable landing on a Southern California highway. It happened in Huntington Beach during rush hour. The pilot reported engine trouble. It had no choice but to bring the plane down right on the road where motorists pulled over to avoid a collision. No one was hurt. And now to the fresh faces coming to a smartphone near you. New emojis will be released early next week. They include all kinds of new expressions and hair colors reflecting the diversity of the world. And they go way beyond faces. 157 new symbols in all. By the way, if you want to see the complete set, head on over to our Nightly News Facebook page. They're there. When we come back, our journey to the place they call the middle of nowhere. Finally tonight, we're going to take you a trip to the middle of nowhere. No, really. Researchers just found the place on the U.S. map that's the furthest from, well, everywhere. We sent Kevin Tibbles to the end of the road.
Glasgow, Montana, population 3,300.
It's serene and surreal at the same time.
It's as far as you can get from the hustle and bustle of big city America. A.J. Etherington runs the local paper in a place the Washington Post recently dubbed the middle of nowhere.
We knew we were in the middle of nowhere before anybody ever told us we were in the middle of nowhere.
Researchers say Glasgow is the furthest town from any metropolitan area with more than 75,000 inhabitants in the lower 48. In Glasgow's case, that would be Billings, a mere 277 miles down the road.
Hello, Sean.
Mayor Becky Erickson says her constituents enjoy their own company.
Doesn't it get a little lonely out here?
We like that. We're used to that. If you get lonely, you can go to the grocery store. You could visit with people there.
Or here to the Busted Knuckle, where on Thirsty Thursdays, folks shoot the breeze over a pint of middle-of-nowhere beer. Glasgow's so embraced its new moniker, they're printing T-shirts for those who've been there and done that.
Back to the pen.
The Billingsley family has been ranching here for 110 years. Total freedom, but not for the faint of heart.
We have to take care of cattle when it's 25, 30 below, and, you know, you hear people say, oh, man, it was so cold when I walked from my car to my office. I'm like, come to my office and spend several hours out in this.
We're standing in your office right here.
This is my office.
There ain't no cubicles out here.
In a cone or in a cup?
In a cup.
About the only place in town where you will find a line is at Burgie's, serving up a scoop or two of summer.
It's the way of life and the safety, the environment of a small community.
So middle of nowhere isn't really a knock at all.
We embrace it. We'd love to have people come and visit Glasgow. and they can experience it.
It's only a 5-hour drive.
From anywhere.
So you see, the middle of nowhere has been somewhere all along. Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Glasgow, Montana.
And that's NBC Nightly News for this Saturday. Tomorrow on Nightly News with Kate Snow, the controversy over playgrounds where safety is not the main concern. I'm Jose Diaz-Balart, reporting from New York. Thank you for the privilege of your time, and good night.